The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, Pregnancy Test Before Surgery, What to Know About Consent and Your Rights. And this article was written by Rebecca Long. Like millions of people in the U.S., we've both had surgery, albeit different kinds. During a recent conversation about our experiences, we discovered an interesting commonality. We had both unknowingly been tested for pregnancy before our procedures. Although surgery is incredibly common, the average person will undergo nearly 10 surgical procedures in an 85-year lifespan, many people aren't aware that they'll likely have to take a pregnancy test beforehand. But with the overturn of Roe v. Wade and increasing surveillance of people with uteruses, it's more important than ever to pay attention. So why are people tested for pregnancy before surgery? Speaking to Teen Vogue, Tricia Pashricha, M.D., a gastroenterologist at Massachusetts General Hospital, explains that there are actual and theoretical risks to a fetus and pregnant person during surgery. In a 2022 STAT article, she quotes the president of the American Society of Anesthesiologists, who identifies some of those real risks: preterm labor or fetal loss, particularly with abdominal and pelvic surgeries, and disruptions to fetal development with procedures involving radiation. On the flip side, other risks, like that of anesthesia, are more conceptual, as there is a lack of evidence that anesthetic drugs are harmful to a developing pregnancy. At many facilities, patients under 18 who have begun to menstruate are also tested, and because they're minors, parents or guardians can consent on their behalf. Massachusetts General Hospital for Children, for instance, requires that girls be tested for pregnancy or risk the cancellation of procedures that require sedation. The hospital does not specify how the policy is handled for minors who are trans or non-binary. When one of us had jaw surgery at 15, she was first asked to give a urine sample and only learned afterward that it was for a pregnancy test. While there are evidence-based reasons for pre-surgical pregnancy testing, there were issues with this practice even before the fall of Roe, including overuse, lack of standardization, and sometimes failure to obtain explicit patient consent. In practice, some say these tests are not always given out of medical necessity, but because of protocol. Colleen McNicholas, D.O., the chief medical officer for Planned Parenthood of St. Louis and Southwest Missouri, notes that people who can't become pregnant, such as those who have had a sterilization procedure, aren't sexually active, or whose partners can't get them pregnant, are still often tested. A 2012 American Society of Anesthesiologists report found that 0.3 to 1.3% of preoperative pregnancy tests were positive for patients who didn't know they were pregnant. Additionally, a 2018 assessment of the Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology suggests that verbal screening for pregnancy risk using the Pregnancy Reasonably Excluded Guide is effective in reducing the need for pregnancy testing. The indiscriminate administration of preoperative pregnancy tests, coupled with a low percentage of positive results, suggests this protocol is overused. The more information a doctor has about a patient before surgery, the better. But Dr. McNicholas suggests the routine practice of pre-surgery pregnancy testing is grounded in doctors' fear of a negative impact on a developing fetus, which, while it shows appropriate consideration for patients who have a desired pregnancy, may not be relevant to all those who undergo procedures. We also have to think about it in the context of the urgency or necessity of the procedure itself, Dr. McNicholas adds. While this practice is ubiquitous, the manner in which these tests are given varies widely among hospitals and providers. For example, Dr. Pasricha says that if someone refuses to take a pregnancy test before a procedure, she will still proceed after discussing possible risks with the patient and documenting that they declined the test. However, she notes that another gastroenterologist may make a different decision. While many medical facilities have their own policies around pre-surgery pregnancy testing, there's no guarantee that everyone follows them. A Journal of Peri-Anesthesia Nursing Study, published in 2019, reviewed adherence to a pre-surgery pregnancy protocol at an ambulatory surgery center for 1 year. The protocol included not only the administration of the test, but also asking about a patient's last period and the possibility of pregnancy, as well as completing proper documentation. Protocol compliance was 0.7%. As Dr. Pasricha told WGBH in a 2022 interview, you'd probably be hard-pressed to find someone who hasn't had one of these tests before a procedure. Whether they knew it or not is another story. When one of us underwent elective ovarian cyst removal 6 months ago, she was tested for pregnancy beforehand. After developing a post-operative complication, she had emergency abdominal surgery 1 week later at the same hospital and was again handed a cup to pee in without explanation. Unsurprisingly, her pregnancy status hadn't changed a week after gynecological procedure. Again, while facilities may have guidelines around pregnancy testing, we know from personal experience that they don't always obtain explicit patient consent. Even if a patient is told the urine sample is being used to test for pregnancy, they may not be informed that the result of the test will be kept in their medical record. Refusal to take the test is also recorded. In a 2009 letter to the editor in Anesthesia and Analgesia, three anesthesiologists advocated against universal non-gynecological pre-surgery pregnancy testing. They pointed out that insurance companies and, under certain conditions, employers, if the insurance is provided through work, may gain access to pregnancy test results in patients' medical records. They also mentioned that people should not, but may face coercive consequences if they refuse the test, including the automatic cancellation of a procedure. There's clearly a lot to consider when deciding whether or not to consent to a pregnancy test before surgery, but many patients aren't given the context needed to make an informed decision, if given a choice at all. We're just handed a cup to pee in. Before the Dobbs decision was released, many states in the U.S. were effectively living in a post-Roe reality. Now that the landmark ruling is formally overturned, practices like pre-surgery pregnancy testing carry new potential consequences. Before we explore those implications, it's important to note that our research suggests this may be the first time in U.S. history that abortion isn't nationally protected when pre-surgical pregnancy testing is standard. Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, and it wasn't until the late 1970s that rapid urine pregnancy tests became widely available. We didn't find any academic papers that mentioned pre-surgery pregnancy testing published before the 1990s, and as recently as 2009, some medical societies didn't include testing for pregnancy prior to surgery as part of their protocols. Now, most do. This is all to say that with the repeal of Roe, we've entered into new territory. Dr. McNicholas says that while there are some obvious and intermediate tragic effects of this decision, we won't know the true public health consequences for probably a decade. How will physicians' fear of legal consequences impact patient care? What are the repercussions of medical facilities having records of patients' pregnancy tests in states where abortion is illegal? Could a record of a patient's refusal to take a test later be used against them? While HIPAA protects patients' privacy medical information, it's not absolute. Medical records can be subpoenaed. In a post-Dobbs Data for Progress survey, 41% of respondents said they were concerned about sharing medical information while seeking reproductive care after being told about the HIPAA privacy loophole that allows for the release of medical information without a patient's consent in certain situations. Dr. Pasricha says that patients are being put into an unnecessarily bad position because of anti-abortion legislation. She worries that people will now potentially make medical decisions that may not be in their favor, such as declining a pre-surgery pregnancy test, which, while not always necessary, may sometimes be important. Dr. Pasricha lays out the ethical conundrum. How do we extricate the medical validity of these tests from the potential harm that a patient might experience if having an unwanted pregnancy becomes documented? One of the downplayed but real consequences is also the erosion of public trust in medical providers and an increased sense that our bodily autonomy continues to be chipped away. When the possibility of pregnancy is enough to make patients jump through hoops to receive care, the message is that we are vessels, not people. Dr. Pasricha explains that screening is useful because, in a given population, some patients unknowingly will be pregnant. Concurrently, she acknowledges that as individuals, patients know their situations, their bodies, and their experiences so much better than doctors do. Given the current cultural climate around reproductive health care, providers may be wondering how best to approach pre-surgery pregnancy testing with their own patients. Dr. Nicholas points out that sometimes the medical community is asked to act as agents of the state, reporting certain information to law enforcement, and this is one of those times. The onus, she says, is on physicians, on nurses, on those of us who have sworn an oath to care for patients, to make sure we're not doing that and that every decision we make is grounded in what is best for the patient. Speaking from experience, what is best for the patient includes giving us all the information we need to make confident decisions about our health care. While our surgeries differed in almost every way, what unified our experiences was being tested for pregnancy without our knowledge and without being told the results would be part of our medical records. Dr. Pasricha says that this issue is not unique. I've also heard from others that it's just something that happens and they don't get told why. My belief is that doctors should be telling everybody exactly what we're doing and why for every single testing procedure. As patients in a country that is increasingly hostile to people with uteruses, it's easy to feel disempowered. However, there are some things that we can do to regain control over our bodies and our health care. Independently, both Dr. Pasricha and Dr. McNicholas advise that patients take a pregnancy test at home before a procedure so they will know their pregnancy status when they enter pre-op. This can give you peace of mind and significantly decrease the possibility of having an unexpected positive pregnancy test result in your medical record. And while it is a practitioner's responsibility to give patients all the context they need to make informed decisions about their health care, we also shouldn't be afraid to advocate for ourselves. The next time you're told to pee in a cup, ask why. And our next article from the teenmagazine.com. Amidst the craziness of life, remember the importance of sleep. And this article was written by Fiona Lee. Sleep is a fundamental biological necessity that is often overlooked or underestimated in our fast-paced, hectic lives. In the midst of our busy schedules and endless to-do lists, it can be easy to prioritize other tasks and ignore the importance of resting and giving your body a break. However, the importance of getting enough restful sleep can never be overstated. It not only improves our physical health, but also plays a crucial role in our mental and emotional well-being, too. In this article, we will explore the benefits of sleep, the consequences of sleep deprivation, and practical tips for getting better quality sleep. The benefits of sleeping. Sleep is essential for your physical health. Getting enough sleep is key to maintaining good physical health. Chronic sleep deprivation can lead to a range of health problems, including an increased risk of chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. It can also weaken the immune system, making it more difficult for your body to fight off infections and diseases. Poor sleep can also cause tinnitus, a condition characterized by a ringing or buzzing in the ears, as well as premature aging, for example, premature graying of the hair. Actually, good sleep is essential for muscle repair and growth, tissue regeneration, and also the release of hormones that control our appetites and metabolism. Sleep enhances memory and your ability to learn. Getting enough restful sleep is essential for enhancing memory and the ability to learn. During sleep, the brain processes and consolidates information learned during the day, making it easier to remember and recall later on. In contrast, sleep deprivation has been shown to impair cognitive function, including memory, attention, and problem-solving ability. While staying up all night to study for a test may seem like a good idea, it can actually be counterproductive. Lack of sleep can impair memory consolidation and retention, making it harder to recall information during the test. Moreover, sleep-deprived individuals may experience difficulty concentrating and focusing, leading to poor performance on the test. Sleep enables a longer lifespan. Establishing good sleep habits early in life can contribute to a longer and healthier life. While it may be tempting for teens to prioritize social activities, schoolwork, and other responsibilities instead of prioritizing sleep, the long-term benefits of good sleep cannot be overstated. Chronic sleep deprivation has been associated with an increased risk of chronic diseases such as heart disease, diabetes, and obesity, as well as mental health problems, including depression and anxiety. Therefore, it is important for teens to prioritize restful sleep and establish healthy sleep habits early on, which can set the foundation for good sleep throughout their lifespan. By making sleep a priority and practicing good sleep hygiene, teens can improve their overall health and well-being, potentially contributing to a longer and more fulfilling life. Practical tips for getting better quality sleep. Stick to a consistent sleep schedule. One of the most effective ways to improve sleep quality is to stick to a consistent sleep schedule. This means trying to go to bed and wake up at the same time every day, even on weekends. By establishing a regular sleep routine, the body's internal clock becomes more synchronized, which can improve sleep quality and make it easier to fall asleep and wake up naturally. Inconsistencies in sleep patterns can disrupt the body's natural sleep-wake cycle, making it harder to fall asleep and wake up feeling refreshed. Therefore, maintaining a consistent sleep schedule is an essential part of good sleep hygiene and can help individuals achieve restful and rejuvenating sleep each night. Limit caffeine and alcohol intake. Limiting caffeine and alcohol intake is another practical tip for improving sleep quality. Caffeine is a stimulant that can interfere with the body's ability to fall asleep and stay asleep, so it's important to avoid consuming caffeine in the evening or close to bedtime. This includes not just coffee, but also other caffeinated beverages like tea, soda, and energy drinks. Similarly, alcohol can disrupt sleep quality by causing frequent awakenings during the night and interfering with deep, restorative sleep. Although alcohol may initially make you feel drowsy, it will ultimately lead to a poor night's sleep. To promote restful sleep, It's best to limit caffeine and alcohol intake or avoid them altogether, especially in the evening after 2 p.m. or close to bedtime. Limit screen time before bed. Limiting screen time before bed is another practical tip for improving sleep quality. The blue light emitted by electronic devices like smartphones, tablets, and computers can interfere with the body's natural sleep-wake cycle by suppressing the production of the sleep-inducing hormone melatonin. This can make it harder to fall and remain asleep, leading to an inadequate amount of rest for your body. To avoid the negative effects of blue light, it's best to avoid using electronic devices for at least an hour before bedtime. Instead, try engaging in relaxing activities like reading a book, taking a warm bath, or practicing relaxation techniques like meditation or deep breathing. By limiting screen time before bed, individuals can improve their sleep quality and wake up feeling more refreshed and energized in the morning. Sleeping is a crucial biological necessity that should never be overlooked. Getting enough restful sleep is not only essential for our physical health, but also plays a critical role in our cognitive, emotional, and mental well-being. By prioritizing good sleep hygiene and practicing practical tips like sticking to a consistent sleep schedule, limiting caffeine and alcohol intake, and reducing screen time before bed, individuals can improve their sleep quality, leading to a healthier, more fulfilling life. It's time to make sleep a priority and give our bodies the rest and rejuvenation they deserve. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Euphoria Season 3 set to air ideally in 2025. And this article was written by Ashley Carter. Euphoria fans are going to have to wait nearly 2 years to see those chaotic teenagers back on their screens again. All writing at HBO has been paused due to the WGA writer's strike, and that also includes Euphoria, according to HBO's executive Francesca Orsi, who spoke to Deadline in a wide-ranging interview. The show's creator, Sam Levinson, was pulling double duty on the teen drama alongside his newest endeavor, The Idol, which stars Lily Rose Depp and Abel Tesfaye, The Weeknd. Because of those reasons, fans might not get to see Zendaya and Sydney Sweeney and co. back on their screens until at least 2025. Euphoria is one of those that we had begun writing in tandem with post-production on Idol, but at this point, we don't have countless scripts, Orsi said. We can't start shooting, so the delivery of that show, ideally in 2025, will be determined on when we can pick back up with Sam, who at this point is all pencils down and just finishing posts on Idol. With a 2025 tentative air date, fans will have waited more than 3 years for the third season to come out after the second season aired in January 2022. HBO's other hit shows, The Last of Us and White Lotus, along with another Game of Thrones prequel, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, have also paused writing amid the strike. House of the Dragon is expected to air in the summer of 2024. While everything at this moment is pencils down, I'm hopeful that we can come to terms sooner than later, Orsi continued. Otherwise, we will have to assess what is the end of the 24 schedule, what are the shows that are going to be delivered for 2025. And our next article from TeenVogue.com. Harry Styles was asked to name a fan's unborn child at a concert. And this article was written by Sarah Delgado. If you've been following him for a while, you'd know anything can happen at a Harry Styles concert. Remember that time he helped a fan come out to her mom? Or when someone threw a chicken nugget at the stage? Well, now adding to the list, we have Harry Styles names someone's unborn baby at a concert. As you might or might not know yet, Harry Styles is back on the road in Europe with the 2023 leg of his Love on Tour tour, and the concert hijinks are back in full swing. During one of his most recent stops at Coventry in the UK, as it's customary now, Styles took the time to interact with the crowd and read a couple of signs from fans. One in particular had a very peculiar request for the former One Direction member naming their unborn child. "Baby due today. Name it, please," the handmade sign read, per a video shared on TikTok. Before we move on, let's appreciate the dedication of going to a Harry Styles concert on your literal due date. Done? Okay then, let's carry on. After the sign caught Styles' attention, the fan proceeded to provide a bit more context to help the superstar with the name picking. "My cat is called Zane, and my dog's called Lewis, so I can't use Harry," the fan can be heard saying in the video. "We think someone had a direction or past that they are trying to keep at bay now." After hearing the stipulations, Styles proceeded to ask the mom-to-be if they had any ideas for a potential name. None. With a clean slate, Styles opened the floor for suggestions. "We've got a Jimmy," he said. "Would you like Tate to name your child?" he shadily added. After a bit of back and forth, a light bulb went off in the British star's head. "How about Harry?" he cockily proclaimed, running away to the main stage. "It couldn't get any better if you tried." Great suggestion, only if it weren't the only name barred from the get-go. Whether the fan takes Styles' suggestion or not remains to be seen. But there's one thing we know for sure. With Love on Tour back on the road, we can safely expect more unhinged fan interactions all summer long. And for that, we are thankful. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.